Hi, I'm Dr. Barbara Byers, and welcome back to my podcast. Today, I'm going to talk about trauma. And I know we only have a few minutes, so I'll hit the highlights, but I want to refer you back first to a podcast I did a good while back on adverse childhood experiences, ACEs, that would be a good thing to listen to along with this. So trauma has such a lasting impact on us. So it's just helpful to recognize it and understand it and have some tools to deal with it. So just imagine you're an ordinary person on an ordinary day, and then unexpectedly, you're in the middle of a train wreck. Everything has changed dramatically. The way you see the world, your expectations about your safety, your flood of thoughts and emotions, new fear has set in, the fear of imminent danger and foreboding. And that's trauma. And trauma is very demanding of us. At some level, it continues to speak to us. You're not safe. It could happen again. Danger, danger, danger. Pay attention. It demands our attention and it sets the brain in a new way. Psalm 18:4 says, "The torrents of destruction assailed me." And, you know, that sets our expectation of calamity. And one of the clearest expressions, I think, in the Bible is in Job 3:25-26. "For the thing that I greatly feared is come upon me, and that which I was afraid of has come. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet." In trauma, we don't have a quietness within. We're not at rest. There's a foreboding of imminent danger, and it stunts our imagination. Van der Kolk has written a good book called The Body Keeps Score about trauma, and he says, "The essence of trauma is that it is overwhelming, unbelievable, and unbearable." Now, the younger we are when it happens, the younger our nervous system is, the less it takes to cause us trauma. The less it takes and the more it gets set in very early to our foundation. Trauma engages our brain structures, such as the amygdala and the limbic system where memories are stored. And then the brain kind of becomes a threat detection machine. It's constantly scanning what's wrong, what's going to go wrong. So we have to reset and retrain our brain. Now, there's four core components in our reaction to trauma. And these, of course, come in degrees and they're interrelated. So we're always trying to protect ourselves with a full battery of responses. These four are hyperarousal, constriction, dissociation, and helplessness. And these are all normal responses to threats. They just become problematic when they're habitual, when they are set into our brain as our normal reaction. So the first one, hyperarousal, this is physical and mental. I'm quoting, "Most often people with a history of early adversity go in between two mind states. Overmodulation of feelings, shutting down emotionally because they're unaware of what they're truly feeling, so we overmodulate, or undermodulation, where they're caught up in intense feeling states and intense emotions, easily triggered by difficult interactions. Those who had multiple traumas in childhood might have multiple areas of thwarted brain development that affect them in myriad ways in their adult life." So we won't just be hyper aroused in our emotions though, but our physical bodies will also reflect muscle tension, changes in blood pressure, changes in breathing, changes in heart rate. It's why learning to have slow, structured, deep breathing to calm ourselves is very important. The second trauma reaction is constriction, getting smaller. In our bodies, we want to constrict, and in our constricted perceptions of our environment. So in other words, we just completely focus on one thing. We're not present to notice everything else. It's a very narrow focus because we're just focused on that perceived threat. and we isolate. If I'm already aware something in me is going on and it doesn't feel right, then in shame and in powerlessness and all that, I will isolate myself. And the true self doesn't show up or doesn't show up fully. We become narrow, we become hidden, we become closed down, but it really doesn't work to suppress it. Vanderkolk said, as long as you keep secrets to suppress information, you are fundamentally at war with yourselves. Well, the third trauma reaction is dissociation. In its mildest form, it's just kind of that sense of spaciness some people get. We don't stay in reality. We don't stay present. There's some level of fragmentation. We feel it inside. We try to overcome it by accentuating our cognitive learning, our left brain learning. We may cover it with a kind of dogmatism. You know, if we feel certain about something, then we don't feel so fragmented. If I dissociate, I don't have to be there when it's happening. Sometimes even during a traumatic event, I've had clients tell me that they just dissociated and went somewhere else. And we dissociate from our bodies, and it helped them to cope and stay alive at that point. When we dissociate, we may experience a split between our consciousness, the consciousness of our body, or maybe one part of our body, and a split between ourselves and our emotions or sensations or memories. Denial is one of the mildest forms of dissociation, and we've all practiced that. Then the fourth trauma reaction is helplessness. Immobility, freezing is associated with that, a feeling of helplessness. You know, we go into fight, flight, or freeze, we freeze. In a traumatic reaction, it's like we have our foot on the brake and the accelerator at the same time. The emotion is being released, but then it's also being shut down. Sometimes we just freeze and our bodies can't even move. Sometimes we feel an emotional numbness and shut down part of ourselves. And sometimes the only emotion we allow is anger, because anger can feel very protective. It feels pretty powerful. And we keep all the other emotions at bay. So we become an expert at avoiding emotions. So all four of these, as I said, can be normal, but when we use them over an extended period of time, we keep re-experiencing in some ways that unresolved traumatic event. Now, if I have a pretty stable nervous system, it's going to take more to traumatize me. So part of our trauma reaction is based on how resilient we are. And that's why the younger we are, the harder it is. So the earlier it happens, the more it's going to affect me. And then the truth sets in, like, life is like this. How do I handle it? I can't handle it. But if we've had someone present and someone helped us, because we do need others, relationally, then we'll become much more resilient. You know, when trauma is just too intense, we just short circuit. It just shuts the brain down. So we have to learn to handle intensity with resilience. And part of it, as I said, that helps is having relationships. And we can learn to develop joy. I think people think, oh, joy just comes on you. Actually, you can learn. Joy has intensity to it. And so joy is one of the protectors against trauma. And the brain can handle much larger adverse experiences if we've learned to develop joy. Even if something miserable comes along, I don't have to shut down. So we build that resilience capacity in the Lord and with other people. And we can invite the Lord to help us remember joyful events, to help us remember his presence in the midst of difficult things. Because the nervous system is just like a muscle. The more we use it, the more we build in that area, the more repetition. And the more we learn to have joy, then the more and more we can handle adversity. Our brain wants to practice joy. It doesn't want to practice resentment and undue fear and sadness and disgust. When we are calm, when we are quiet inside, when we have a quiet heart, serotonin is released. That's a happy hormone. So the ability to quiet ourselves is one of the biggest predictors of our mental and emotional health for a lifetime. And I love that, because the joy of the Lord is our strength. And joy is how we practice quieting ourselves. When we're with God's people, we ought to be in joyful environments. It builds our resilience. So what's the brain looking for? Well, the brain's always asking, who wants me? Who wants to be with me? Well, the Lord does. And if we can pull the brain into, you know, stable configurations, keep it in a stable place, we can solve a lot of problems and we can think more clearly. If we know God wants to be with me, I have his presence, I can keep returning to that. It's what John talks about in John 15, abiding in him. I can keep returning to his presence. And even when I lose the sense of his presence, I can return to the truth. No, he is with me, and he's not going to give me more than I can handle. Trauma is memory mapped, but relationships are memory mapped too. So we can overcome one with the other. If I can remember times when I experienced the goodness of God, and we can ask him to help us remember his active presence, then I can learn to practice joy in the midst of any kind of traumatic reaction that may come up. And you know, if we've had a reaction, if we've had a trauma and we didn't sense the Lord's presence, which sometimes we don't, we can ask him, Lord, at the time, where were you? What were you feeling? What were you doing? What were you, how were you caring for me? So we can know even that he cared for us. And even in that, he will take that suffering and bring beauty out of it. So we need the mind of Christ in transformation. The old mind won't do it. The unaided mind won't do it. We need Romans 12, 2, that we need to transform our mind. And we need to learn to incorporate that trauma in our hearts in a way that we can trust he is bringing beauty. He is bringing redemption. A while back, I was just reading in Isaiah, and I'd had a series of dreams that troubled me, some old stuff, and I was asking the Lord about it. As I was reading in Isaiah, Isaiah 60 said, your days of mourning are over. And you know when a little phrase will jump out of the page at you, and you know it's the Lord. And I just agreed with the Lord. I said, all right, my days of mourning about this very difficult thing that had transpired over years, it's over. It's over now. I agree with you. And then I was reading in the next chapter, Isaiah 61, which most of us know, and it says, I will give you beauty for ashes. And when I read that, the Holy Spirit just said, bring me your ashes. And so I just made a big pile of ashes. I named everything I could think of concerning that. My emotions, everything concerning it. Did I need to forgive anything? And so on. And when I finished that, I just lifted that to the Lord and I gave him that big old pile of ashes. And what I saw in my mind's eye, what I saw with my holy imagination, I saw the real. Those ashes morphed and became oil, and the oil poured down over me. So that verse says, I'll give you beauty for ashes and the oil of joy for mourning. You see, it's joy that overcomes the trauma. And the Lord had done that for me. And I made a new memory. I made a memory with joy because his love dissolves the trauma. So the solution to trauma is to surrender to him, to trust him, and then to walk it out. We can have inner healing, but we need to sustain it and cultivate it and walk it out. We need to learn different patterns when it's calmer and milder. You know, we don't learn to swim in a storm in the middle of the ocean. We learn in the shallow end of the pool, hopefully. Although my mother told me her brothers threw her in the Guadalupe River. I guess they would have hauled her out if she hadn't, if she hadn't figured it out. But we want to learn to handle things when it's calmer. We meditate. We learn joy. We practice the presence of the Lord. And you know, our history with trauma has likely left us feeling unsafe and unattached with people. So one of the things we have to do is begin to increase our capacity to know and trust others who are safe and to be known by others. We need to tell our story to others who are interested and will walk with us. Psalm 107:2 says, "Let the redeemed of the Lord tell their story, those he redeemed from the hand of the foe." And we need to know, you know, that we're not alone. There's all kind of therapies for trauma, and we don't have time to go into those right now. But I want to add one thing. We need to treat our bodies well, too. So much comes from our gut. And we need to eat well. We need to learn how to meditate, how to breathe well, how to direct our thoughts. One of the things that has helped me coming out of trauma is just this simple verse. It's Zephaniah 3:15. "I will fear disaster no more. When I find myself in foreboding, I will say, no, I will not go that direction. The joy of the Lord is my strength." So we want to come through trauma with, you know, with gifts. We want that suffering to mean something. We want to come through stronger in spirit and more resilient. So we learn to abide in Him and abide in His joy, connect with others, renew our mind with truth, let Him redeem our narrative, pay attention to our gut health, notice small things all throughout the day that are just glimmers of joy, and that we can take moments to breathe and be calm. And then one last thing, sing or hum. The vagus nerve runs through here. And when you hum and sing, it says all is well. So I hope this brief foray into trauma has helped you and that you'll join me again. Thank you.